Welcome to the third and final audio session for the PDH online course on electrical design of jails. We will continue talking about electrical design tasks. Until very recently, CCTV meant analog cameras, analog signals, and mechanical and electronic switches. There were three specialized devices for jails: the video sequencer, video multiplexer, and time-lapse videotape recorder. Analog signals are inherently low resolution to be compatible with commercial television standards. The sequencer stepped through a series of cameras with adjustable dwell time for the picture and a hold button to stop the stepping or select a single camera. The multiplexer, called a quad, put multiple images on the screen at the same time. Four images were available at first, hence the name quad. Today, 9, 16, and 25 images can be displayed. As with the sequencer, the screen can be used for a single image by pressing a button. The time-lapse videotape recorder, VCR, has been around for at least 20 years, and people are buying new ones daily. Record a little, wait a little, record a little, wait a little. It works, but as the tape wears, the picture deteriorates. 24/7 operation gives the tape about a 6-month life at most, and deteriorated quality as it approaches end of life. Analog cameras require power, which has to date been supplied from local receptacle circuits near the cameras. Typically, all cameras are brought back to a common point, that is the coaxial data lines. Then a sequencer and a time-lapse VCR make an economical archive. And keep in mind, typically when something happens, you need to consult the archive for the last 24 hours or the last 5 days. You don't need 30 days of storage. You don't need permanent storage of what happened 5 years ago or 2 years ago. When there's problems, the problems come to the surface pretty quickly, and being able to pull up the evidence, if we want to call it that, or at least our best information on it, happens within a reasonable length of time. I usually specify systems for 30 days of storage, feeling that's very, very conservative. And again, it's pretty economical within current purchase project. The hard disk drive, which is where we store these today, costs about $1,000 to get a month's storage. I mean, at most $2,000, depending on how many cameras you have. In the old days, we used to use, I'm trying to think, there was this funny looping thing so that I think you used 8 tapes a day and kept one, something like that. But the videotapes are almost completely gone, except maybe on Law and Order on television. And again, the people buy them, but it's not an economical decision. It's just lethargy and inertia in the industry. People understand it. Even people with no training understand it. Today, for less money, you can buy a unit with a big hard drive. And one of the real popular things now is to give you whatever you want off your hard drive on a memory stick. I say memory stick, but SD compact, you know, that kind of thing. And again, very, very economical. And you can offload for archive purposes if you get something that's very important. For jails, controlling access to the VCR is critical so that images can be used with a judge if needed. This is called chain of custody. We discussed this earlier. The person who presents the tape to the judge must be able to swear that the tape has never been left lying around so that unknown persons could erase or modify it. Following sketches graphically represent a surveillance analog CCTV system. I'm going to start at the right-hand side of the picture that's in the printout, and we've got a little box with a lens on it, which is an analog CCTV camera. Got two wires going into it. One is to a local receptacle, and it's shown as a transformer from 120 to 24 volts, and then into a box for a local receptacle circuit. In a real upscale installation, it could be a dedicated circuit on the circuit breaker panel, and possibly, instead of a transformer for the camera, a transformer for a row of fuses, so you're on 6 or 12 cameras off the single dedicated circuit. Then we got coaxial cable going back to the master control room, or to the, in this case, to the local pod control room. I'm looking at my drawing, it doesn't say pod control room. I know that's the pod control room, but and perhaps it shows up in the discussion. The coaxial cable goes back to the pod control room, so all the cameras in the pod are available to the guard correctional officer in charge of the pod. I like this. The place I was working didn't, so we just ran them back to the control room. The nice thing was we put everything on the data network, so anytime you want, you can plug in a personal computer and view all the cameras or any selection of the cameras. So it wasn't a permanent decision where you ran your coaxial cables. Forgive me. The coaxial cables are really kind of locked in. After you run them, they're running. Nobody's going to mess with them. But since we were dumping into a digital recorder and then putting the output of the digital recorder on the data network, you could pick it up any place the data network existed. And yes, this was a dedicated data network. This was not the administrative data network. Only people who had the special data cable for this network could view what was on it. I'm showing a pod control room with a scan monitor and a fixed monitor. That's what guards seem to like. I certainly agree with it. Something of interest, you can leave it up for a short time or a long time just to see what's happening there. And you can have your scan monitor so you loop through all the places where something bad might happen and just kind of stop and look at it anytime you're a little worried. Or got a spare minute. I mean, it's your job to watch these things. We're showing 16 cameras coming into a 16-port sequencer with loop-through and fixed output. Fixed output is the fixed camera. The scan output is the scan monitor. And it's loop-through, so all 16 cameras that come in go out and can continue on down to the master control room, which has a 16-camera time-lapse video tape recorder and a local monitor. I didn't get into a lot of detail here because we do have a separate course exclusively dedicated to closed circuit TV. But I would like to point out that analog TV inherently offers lower resolution than digital. And analog TV treats resolution badly. The live camera feed is much better than what they tend to put on the recorder. And this is historically, and everybody smiles and agrees to it, but it's bad. If you put two monitors side by side, one the live feed and the other a playback of a recording, a noticeably poorer response on the playback version of it. But again, everybody does this, and the whole advantage to the analog system is everybody does this. It has a lot of inertia going for it. And a narrative box for the discussion of the graphic presented. There's a very strong component of personal preference in the annotation obsolete above. I think you probably picked that up from my current discussion. All products shown have evolved to very reliable functional items. The camera is now digital with a digital to analog converter to transmit the signal down the coax. The sequencer is a digital switch. It does not go clack, clack, clack as it works. It makes no noise whatsoever and is extremely reliable. The sequencer can today involve the quad function as well, and often 8 individual controllable monitor lines, because once again, it's a computer. Good news of the computer is you can do anything you can imagine to program on the computer. Bad news is when you transfer to generator power, you get Bill Gates' famous reboot, and wait and wait and wait. The VCR is a digital video recorder with hard drives over 1 terabyte. And again, 1 terabyte costs $1,000 now. Isn't that amazing? There are separate PDH online course which compares analog and IPTV systems. I say again, the VCR is a DVR with computer hard drives over 1 terabyte. What I'm doing is moving it out of that narrative. I warned you that wouldn't be on the quiz when I said we were doing narratives. Palco is a name to remember. They've been doing this for the life of security television. They do an exceedingly good job. They offer a complete range of analog and good entry selection of IPTV gear, along with excellent tutorials. And again, with just a little trouble, they'll let you in. You sit there and go through their tutorial, and they train you in their product line. And again, it's an excellent product line. So in effect, they train you in current technology. considerably less expensive IPTV digital system is shown graphically next time. And what's going on here is almost the same drawing with some notable differences. Right-hand side is the camera, and obviously there's a data line coming off of it. But instead of a power line coming off of it, the power connects into the data line. This is called POET, power over Ethernet. Much easier to run the wiring. You want to move it 4 feet, you move it 4 feet. One wire gets moved, not two wires. Goes into a 16-port 10/100/1000 data switch. This was where we were saying it would be the pod control with a local monitor. Now, the local monitor, instead of being a monitor, is a personal computer. Of course, a personal computer costs less than a monitor. And, of course, a personal computer is fully programmable. So, in the situation we were doing, there are many ranges of software available to run the PC, which is your monitor. All of them that I have been reviewing, at least, the camera directly will drive Internet Explorer, a browser. So you can just go into the camera and look out through the camera. Again, it's password protected, so everybody can't do that. Everybody can't look at all the cameras, but it's not hard to do. There's no technical limitation on looking out of the cameras. This has nothing to do with archival storage or playback. Then the signal from the 16-port 10/100/1000 data switch goes down a 62.5/125 multi-mode fiber optic up to 4 miles. And in fact, you have to play a little bit with the kind of fiber optic you use to get the 4 miles, but you can get many, many thousands of feet with fiber optic. How do you get fiber optic out of a data switch? You buy a data switch with fiber optic. Now, the least expensive data switches, which are about $100, I mean, just unreal how inexpensive this stuff is. You need an outboard media converter for $50 to give you two channels, transmit and receive, to send it down the fiber optic. And, of course, you need power here. We're powering the switch, which in turn is powering the power over Ethernet. So we do need power at this point. Going down to a 16-port data switch. Oh my gosh. Why is that? Well, we had a bunch of cameras running into the pod. Now we've got a bunch of pods running into the master control room. At this point, we would probably use more sophisticated software because the sequencer function is very easy. The multiplexer or quad function is a little more difficult. You pay a little more, you get a little more. And we have a single wire, which is called a gigabit wire in this case, going to a dedicated PC network video recorder with 1 terabyte of RAID storage and DVD export. DVD export is becoming just standard, I won't say free because obviously you're paying for it, but it's in the base configuration of every PC they sell. So you don't pay a horrendous predatory premium for the DVD export. And you can also get tape export. Using compressed tapes, you can get 30 days storage on a tape, but of course you can't play it anywhere. You can play it back on this machine, or if you buy a dedicated machine, you can play it back there. A criticism of analog CCTV is the local power source. Digital system shown here sends power from the data switch directly to the camera over the same data cable. Excuse me. Reliable power must be supplied to the data switch to achieve reliability improvement, of course. Copper line cable is shown between the camera and the data switch. This is reasonable for pod and main building internal surveillance. Fiber optic with separate power conductors is used for distant cameras up to 4 miles without special effort. This is getting to be a bad habit. Have to be more careful next time we do this. 16-port 10/100/1000 data switch. What does that mean? 10 megabit was the original Ethernet, and it's still around, and a lot of stuff is made to that classification, and it's kind of a legacy standard. 100 megabit has become the current standard for Ethernet, obviously 10 times the capacity of 10 megabit, and 1,000 megabit or gigabit is the emerging standard for at least long haul runs of data. I say that and that's funny. Long runs of copper don't work. It attenuates the signals, and you don't get your 1,000 megabit signal transmission for any serious distance at all. Patch cables, yes. Room-to-room runs become flaky before long, so you want to convert it to fiber optic for the long runs. But once again, if you've got a 1,000 megabit operation, it's pretty easy to convert to fiber optic. Also, if you want redundant video tape recorders, the 3-foot gigabit copper to the first one and to the second one is awfully easy and awfully reliable and just no fooling around at all. I've been told that it's important to get gigabit jumper cables, that a conventional 100 megabit jumper cable is more lossy than the 1,000 megabit. The 16-port data switch is available in 8-port, 24-port, 48 port sizes, and can be stacked if needed. Cost today is about $100 for 16 ports. Fiber optic converter costs about $50 or can be incorporated into the data switch for about the same cost. 62-125 micro, it's UM, is that micrometer? Anyway, it's the measurement of diameter of the strand. Multimode fiber optic is almost standard. Everything about it is off the shelf. Use a 6-strand cable as the minimum. 2 are required for a LAN data channel. That gives you 4 spare. So if we're setting up a CCTV monitoring system, we're using 2 strands for the CCTV monitoring system. If you decide you want to put the locking system on a console adjacent to the TV monitor, you use another 2 strands for that, and you still got 2 spare. You want to put the administrative network out there so you can see what the charges are against the prisoner, how much care is really appropriate in handling them. Then you've used up all your strands on the 6-strand cable. Typically, people jump very rapidly. After they have decided 6 isn't enough, they go to something like 24. A fiber optic cable can get expensive, but what's really expensive is the terminations. Is fiber optic good? I'd say it's essential, especially in this kind of application. You pay for a couple. Let's say we've got 4 pods, the central control room, and a locked room with the recorders in it. Well, you're talking 4 pods, the other end of 4 pods, one going back to the locked DVR room. So you're talking, you know, 10 terminations. So yeah, it's expensive, but it's not very expensive in the scope of the project. It's the kind of thing you could do on an upgrade very, very easily, take it out of your maintenance budget. The PC monitor is an off-the-shelf PC, usually a Dell. Now, I hesitate to recommend brand names in these courses, but I don't see anything except Dells. Everybody buys a Dell. Why is that? Dell works very well. Dell is extremely competitive on price. And again, when they're competitive on price like this, if you have any problem, you just swap the thing out. And again, I don't see people having trouble with them. So that's where we stand. Only question is, how many can you buy for $1,000? Certainly 3, maybe 4 if you have a good purchasing department. Cameras can be monitored with Internet Explorer, and sequencer and quad functions are available via no-cost utilities. Several products will deliver usable images to a wireless personal digital assistant, PDA. There's something magic about being able to walk down a corridor and know what's on the other side of the door. Network video recorder costs about $5,000. These are not cheap toys, but they're the core of your system. Present models are limited to 16 cameras, so you will need multiple units. The NVR is a complete monitoring station, but this is normally limited to setup and maintenance. The NVR is usually locked away and accessed only for exporting large quantities of data or taking some pictures to haul downtown to show the judge. Reasonable quantities of images and recorded sound can be exported to any PC on the network which has a full capacity client software and user password of the appropriate level. Note that high-end surveillance software applies a watermark to images so they cannot be manipulated without alarm. This aged chain of custody procedures is discussed with time-lapse VCR and incoming processing property storage section of the facility tour. By the way, because of the 16-camera limitation at present, you will need a rack of NVRs. Current client software permits simultaneous view of all units. I say that's not quite right. Usually up to about 100 cameras on one software. So you've got to decide whether you're interested in the kitchen or not interested in the kitchen, whether you're interested in the chapel or not interested in the chapel. Almost certainly you want to take a picture of the lobby and the visitor room and maybe the gate outside. And it's nice to have a picture of what's going on in the master control room, see if things are in control or things look a little bit ragged, like they need some help. Current client software permits simultaneous access to all units. It takes about 5 minutes to swap out a failed NVR for a spare. And again, the joy of this is there's one data cable coming into it. And there's a monitor cable, and there's a power input cable, and you may have a keyboard cable. And that's it. You don't have 16 analog connectors coming into it that each must be removed and each must be reinserted in the proper location. Connection of the CCTV surveillance data network to an administrative data network or to the internet is not recommended. Again, this is from an old guy who has so much confidence in the youth of this nation of being able to break any security that keeping them isolated appears to be a good idea. The problem... Oh, wait a minute. We're starting a new section. The concept just introduced of using a standalone... There, I think we lost a page in this. I apologize for jumping you around like that. Yes, indeed, we did miss a page. And back to where we should be. The reason we must discuss motion control of surveillance recording is that this function brings us valuable documentation of persons being where they should not be. Also, the technology has some limitations which must be discussed. Time-lapse video works. It takes a still picture about once a second. You can rapidly go through recordings from a camera and identify when someone passed a door, used the ATM, or broke a window. The problem is the time-lapse recording uses a lot of space when no one is in the picture. Also, the time scanning that you spend scanning through 24 hours of photos to find a person in one or two of the pictures is very tedious and prone to error. One solution is to hook up a motion detector to the recorder and take pictures only when there's someone there. This is commonly done and will be discussed in the next section. However, as both cameras and recorders have evolved into computers, it becomes easy to detect light level changes in critical parts of the picture. The feature is today a commodity. IPTV cameras can identify when motion is present and send an alarm or email to a stored address with a copy of the picture. Computer-based digital video recorders and network video recorders can identify when motion is present and start high-speed recording of the events, note the action in the event log, and send an email to a stored address along with a copy of the picture. The problem is false alarms. A cloud passing in front of the sun will trip an alarm in an empty room with a window. Sometimes air from a register can trip an alarm. You probably don't want emails and photos of these events. There's sensitivity and critical area adjustments on some units, but there are many false alarms on video motion detection. Video is just too precise to do the screening for you. The goal of reduced storage, however, is easily met. A terabyte of storage will hold 16 cameras for 30 days, 24/7. And again, this is at one frame per second. The concept just introduced of using a standalone PIR motion detector to trip the DVR or NVR into high-speed recording works well. In addition, contact closure alarm can be used to swing a pan-tilt zoom camera to look closely at whatever is in front of the PIR detector. As with motion detection, the DVR or NVR can email an alarm and a copy of the photo. The problem, however, is a basic problem with pan-tilt zoom cameras. They give you an excellent photo of what they're pointed at. They show you nothing of the other 359 degrees of their field of view. If you have two motion detectors and one pan-tilt zoom camera, you can get a picture of one of the events, or you can get a picture of the other event. Or you may get a picture of the bedroom in the apartment house 2 miles away that the guards normally zoom in on. A fixed wide-angle camera will show both events in the example just introduced, but will not give you identifying features of the person or raccoon or armadillo that has caused the event to take place. Some localities provide distance learning for prisoners. This used to entail special telephone connections and equipment. Today, any PC on the internet is a distance learning station. All the caveats on using the internet apply, along with special warnings for jail situations. Distance learning works well when there's a guard present. Nothing beyond an internet connection is required from the electrical design. By the way, the almost universal connection scheme for data lines is to plug the remote line into a switch in the data closet. When the distance learning is not being used, the line can be disconnected from the switch and no damage will be done on the network until use of the distance learning is again attempted. That is, somebody was able to force something into the little flimsy jack on the wall and it tries to damage the data switch the next time you connect to the data switch. Data switches are pretty well isolated, so even if they're totally successful, it just knocks out one line. You got a 24-port switch, so you move to the next one and start the game all over again. Video arraignment is an option of the judge. Many judges feel that the resolution of standard analog video is satisfactory to permit the prisoner and the judge to adequately communicate. Two IPTV cameras with audio provide a very easy, very inexpensive means to provide this service. The camera costs about $1,000. The session on the judge's end is initiated by his bailiff, who accesses the jail camera over the internet. The session on the jail end uses a space with a permanently installed camera and PC, and again, the session is initiated by a guard. When it's working, the judge talks to the prisoner. The session can be recorded by surveillance network video recorder or low-cost NVR software on one of the PCs, or a third PC on the network even. Visiting video is normally handled by visiting booths in the pod day room. This eliminates travel through the facility and releases one or more guards. And again, releasing a guard is a wonderful budget capture. So there's a lot of incentive to do this if it's acceptable to all parties involved. Analog hardwire cameras and monitors can be used. No difficulty at all, especially if we're putting in a sophisticated digital intercom system. It's pretty easy to record off of those things, too. And again, they can both be recorded video and audio. There's a graphic here to show the concept. On each end are identical boxes with a monitor, a camera, and an intercom. There are three cables connecting them, one for video one direction, one for video the other direction, and an intercom which tends to have enough wires to go both directions. In the middle, we're showing a DVR and the box that makes the intercom work. On the other end, again, monitor, camera, and intercom. And of course, a very, very secure box on this. People who are in jail can be pushed into violence. Sometimes it takes a little, sometimes it takes a lot. Depending on who you're talking to on the video visiting, that may be enough to push you over the edge. And again, the day room is an area, well, in any event, you want a secure box around this stuff. Also, on the visitor end, sometimes people can get very, very unhappy. And again, the only thing that's representing the institution is the monitoring camera. So, there is a human tendency to try to take out frustrations on the equipment. Federal law limits audio recording when persons involved have reason to expect their conversations will remain private. Some corrections officials interpret the basic jail situation to be that no one should expect their conversations to be private. On the other hand, a low-key but prominent sign, video and audio recording in effect, solves the problem unequivocally. And I do mean this terminology. I mean, use whatever appeals to you, but this appeals to me. Video and audio recording in effect. People kind of expect video recording. So when you slip in the audio in there, it's not as prominent, it's not as inflammatory. Most digital video recorders and network video recorders include audio recording capability. Often extra PC cards can be purchased or must be purchased. In addition, there's firms specializing in correctional institution audio who offer both simple and sophisticated audio recording systems. Remember the idea of time-lapse video? Same thing works on audio. You don't want to record when nobody's saying anything. So they have a wait period, and then it stops recording. And of course, you want the thing tagged as to which channel you're recording, same as we've been tagging the video. If this is digital, it's inherent. When you save the file, you can have a linked list telling you what was going on there. And if you buy a sophisticated system, it will have these features. Suggested vendor is tskcom.com, and the full URL in the narrative here shows you, you punch this in, it'll come up on a picture of the unit we've been talking about. Lawyer-client conversation should not be recorded unless you have clear direction otherwise, legibly signed and dated. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not offering legal advice, but first off, I don't think it's morally correct to listen in on when they're making up the lies they're going to tell the judge. And second, I'm fairly certain from my limited knowledge that it is forbidden at various levels of the organization. You just don't do that. Vandalism is always a concern in jails. If a malefactor can sufficiently damage the light in his cell, he can knock out all the lights on the circuit in the pod. Wow! It is desirable to be able to turn off individual lights and isolate them from the power panel. Modular cell manufacturers include this feature in their products, and individual control relays can be installed actually fairly easily in the utility space behind the cell. A very nice general duty control relay that mounts on an electric box can be found at www.functionaldevices.com. Their relay in a box, RIB model, is available with multiple contacts, multiple voltages, and external override test switches. I think I mentioned earlier that I tried to get multiple sources for each of the items, you know, like bid situation, all that. Could not find anything equivalent to Functional Devices. They make a marvelous product. Even if you're not worried about turning off the lights in a cell, even if you're not worried about a control relay to operate a solenoid to turn off the water in a cell, you might want to look at Functional Devices just to see what it is they sell. For a while, I was doing a lot of retrofit automation systems where we wanted to turn off people's fans at night, save huge amounts of money. In my ramblings earlier, I mentioned working at a state university. We felt we were saving like $500,000. I don't know if that was a month or a year, but $500,000 catches your attention just from turning off the fans at night. And this is the device that does that. Little bit of wiring, and it doesn't have to be super expensive wiring, and this marvelous device, and you've got the manual override. If your computer system goes dead, you walk up to it and flip the switch into continuous. You're exactly back where you started, getting those wonderful high electrical bills. Let's do water. If the malefactor can sufficiently damage the water supply lines in his cell, he can cause considerable damage right there in his own cell and may require operation of a pod shutoff valve to interrupt the damage. As with the lights, it's desirable to remotely turn off the water to a cell and isolate it from the distribution system. Again, modular cell manufacturers can include this solenoid valve or it can be installed in the utility space behind the cell. Very nice general duty control solenoid valve is www.ascovalve.com, and I think it's the Redhead devices that I like so much. Use with an RIB permits override and testing with little complication. I was debating how much detail to go into on the discussion here. You can buy these ASCO valves with override and manual test operation features as well. But we're electrical guys, right? So let's buy the good choice for the electrical and just use garden variety plumbing supplies. So lighting and water control are usually hardened by a supplementary page on the locking system's man-machine interface. Similar to tab spreadsheets or drill-down user interfaces, the controls are always available, but do not intrude on daily operations on the screen. The electrical designer may be only the only representative of the court system and jail administration. The only representative of the court system and jail administration and IT department to talk to the architect, yes indeed, about the need for data entry, local database, and access to the court's database. This is important because it can be central to the incoming processing area of the facility. Space must be reserved for terminals. Prisoner delivery can be expected to stop completely while the forms are filled out. And of course, power and data lines and receptacles must be made available. The interface to the court's database is becoming more important and may require a lot of attention and coordination with the IT administrators and technicians. Judges don't like to lose prisoners. They want to be able to find out where the prisoners are, especially when in transit. On the other hand, judges are very protective of their databases, and I think rightly so. Again, lots of attention and coordination with IT administrators and technicians to get the thing to work. It may be the electrical designer, it may be the architect, someone else, a facilities manager for the county might be the person to handle this, but it has to be done. The essential network requirements are terminals, a local database server, and interface with the court's database. The essential local database requirements are prisoner identification, property identification, status, and location. It can be extremely valuable to have access to state databases which report on the prisoner's criminal record. And again, this is important at processing because it is warning to the people in the facility, in the institution, what they have to do to take care of this prisoner client. A related topic which should be addressed is remaining data networks. The internet or closed governmental network may be used for video arraignment. The locking system requires a data network connected to remote input-output clusters with a processor and with man-machine interface screens. CCTV surveillance is a dedicated data network. Even if the present system is analog, a new high-resolution digital pan-tilt-zoom camera may be installed to handle special needs. These cameras are beautiful. $1,000, 3 megapixel resolution, digital pan tilt zoom. Visualize this thing in the end of the day room in the pod. So you have the thing on wide angle, and you know, if somebody moves, you can zoom in on it, see who it is over there and what he's doing. Of course, the problem with all pan tilt zoom, you zoom in on him, you don't know what the guy in the other corner is doing. But these digital pan tilt zoom cameras are just unbelievable. Haven't been out long enough to see what the reliability is, but again, the way they run is they've got a dedicated Unix processor in the box. It is a web server. Anybody on the right network with the right password can view what's going on. Using the password, some people are able to operate the pan tilt zoom. Some people are just able to see what's going on in the room. Should these networks converge to become a single common network? In 2006, we say no. We want locking systems to be 100% reliable and untouchable by anyone except the guard stations. We want video surveillance to be very secure. Government bodies are reluctant to share internal email access because of the distractions from their core business by complaints and information requests. Malicious and irritating spam, I don't think it would bring a city to its knees, but it would severely interfere with the proper operation of the city. It's nice for the mayor to be able to shoot out a message to any of his department heads and get a response in short order, and it's all documented and archived. You don't want that mucked up by one of the low-level employees asking about insurance coverage and it going to the mayor instead. Only a very sophisticated common network could combine these needs, and sophisticated means you can't find anyone to fix it. Yeah, there are controllable routers, so from here doesn't go to there, but from there does go to the third place. I don't think you want to do that. I don't want to give that much power to IT. I don't want to wait till the IT guy comes back from his vacation to fix it. Visitor management means identifying, tagging everyone who enters the facility. It's a turnkey function, usually costing about $20,000 plus supplies. It requires additional staff or more duties for existing reception staff. As applied to true visitors, it makes good sense for a jail, especially if combined with an airlock with contraband detection equipment. For prisoners, it makes some sense, and it's being discussed widely, especially by vendors. For staff, it makes some sense. What's wrong with it? Oh, it's down here. The box narrative. Rest homes hate to lose their residents in much the same way jails hate to lose prisoners. Rest homes are adopting RFID bracelets, radio frequency identification. Rest home residents fight diligently to remove or destroy them. They want their privacy too. At this moment in time, the residents are winning. Does not bode well for jail RFID bracelets. The UPS deliveryman and Simplex repairman have not objected. A jail fire alarm is almost identical to a commercial fire alarm. All the components are the same. The differences are in the connections and the programming of the controller. Firstly, commercial fire alarms unlock egress doors. Jail fire alarms do not. Secondly, commercial fire alarms go into alarm in zones and for the entire facility. Jail alarms may do this in administrative and office areas, but not in prisoner areas. The guard rooms and intercoms receive and evaluate information at the same time as they unlock outside doors. It's common to evacuate to another area of the jail rather than evacuating to outside. And again, how many alarms do you want in the guard's control room? Fire alarm is a very genuine alarm, but I don't think you want a strobe horn going off there. You've got a lot of alarms in there. And now, does that mean it just goes into the HMI? No. The man-machine interface is not rated as a life safety device, even though we're using it in that regard. Fire alarms are very much life safety, and an annunciator is a good place for it, and perhaps a slightly different alarm device. Because, again, people like to put in false alarms and watch all the guards jump up and down. So we want to acknowledge the alarms, certainly, but we don't want everybody jumping up and down three times a day. Some localities like to have smoke and heat detectors of the fire alarm display on locking graphic systems. Since this is the normal focus of the guards, it makes good sense, but may make the display busy. Good alternative is to have a remote annunciator in the fire alarm next to the locking console. I like LCD text annunciators. Salesmen like LCD graphic annunciators. My problem is it takes a little orientation to understand what's being represented on a graphic display. Well, that certainly makes sense on the locking system. You're going to spend all day looking at that. You're going to be pressing the buttons to operate locks. You want to know what the lights mean. If you put the fire alarm on that, again, it makes sense. It makes it a little busy if you want to have them big enough to see them and read the legend on them, but it's doable. Putting a duplicate system next to it or down the hall is fine if it's duplicate, but it's not going to be duplicate. The graphic's going to be prepared by a different technician. It's going to look different. So when somebody has to look at the second graphic to make sense out of it, they have to make sense out of it before they can get any value from it. Typically, text is more explanatory. Smoke detector in day room cell, smoke detector in day room pod C. I don't think you can misunderstand that, but trying to figure out how they represented pod C on this graphic and whether it's the day room or the dormitory or the showers, I mean, you don't need that trouble when you've got an emergency. So there's a graphic of what a jail fire alarm should look like. It's the same graphic you use on every fire alarm. You got pulse stations, you got some strobe horns, you got smoke and heat detectors. I broke them out for smoke and heat detectors in the administrative areas. Excuse me. smoke and heat detectors in utility and guard areas, smoke and heat detectors in the prisoner areas, and more smoke and heat detectors in the prisoner areas. They go into the fire alarm control panel. They go into the annunciator for firefighters and perhaps an annunciator for guards at the master control. True story in a narrative box. Kid knocks down a cook and runs into the kitchen at a juvenile detention center. Kid pulls the trip on the chemical fire suppression system over the grill. Dumps nasty powder in the kitchen. Kid runs down the back steps to the loading dock and out of the building. He made it out of the facility because the back gate was open and the guard was watching a truck trying to come in. Plus, they had at least $1,000 in recharge on the chemical suppression system. What was the result of this? The cook has to lock the kitchen door when he goes into the dining room. And we were talking earlier about whether the architect chooses dining room or feed the prisoners in the day room. And again, today it's almost universal to feed the prisoners in the day room. Jails are a special class of institutional buildings. Codes apply a little differently, and the meaning of heavy duty takes on new meaning. This course briefly examines electrical systems that must be selected and detailed by the electrical engineer for new construction or renovation. Final section of the presentation here are related links. We talked about jail lighting from Cooper Lighting and Kennel. Cell locks. This hasn't been updated, but I remember the correct answer. Cell locks from Southern Steel, which is the new name for Folger Adam. And the surprising thing, the old name for Folger Adam is still out there. But that part of the remaining business sells low security devices, electric strikes and such, not heavy duty motorized switches. And I found somebody else who sells motorized switches. So it is worthwhile downloading the PDF to see what this is about. Surveillance CCTV, I talked about Pelco in the course. There's a place called Direct Low Voltage Sales, directlvs.com, that sells a very wide range of very economical and high quality equipment. If you look at their website, kind of looks like everything was imported from Japan, but remember, I think they sell Pelco, by the way. The best stuff comes from Japan these days. JVS has the highest rated surveillance camera that I've been able to find. It's $150 from Direct LVS. I may be remembering wrong, $180, but you know, it's an inexpensive, very high resolution analog camera. And if you want to look around, that's a nice place to look around. They have an extremely wide product line, and they have their own low-cost brand. Now, a lot of times you look at this and you say, why would I want a $22 surveillance TV camera? Well, that's true. In a municipal jail, you probably want stuff with a little better brand recognition on the supplier. But if you're doing something for a church on the side, a $22 TV camera gives them an awful lot more surveillance than they had before. And if you can just stop the guy once who's been stealing stuff, the problem goes away. You can unlock the doors again. High security intercoms. TSK is the place I listed. TSK is the place I've used. Good stuff. And on the internet, I found you a place called Roland. And after I remember this, they had Roland intercom stations with the TSK intercom. Roland makes super heavy-duty intercom stations. You'll want to look at them, even if you're not interested in the other products from them. General-purpose relays. We discussed functional devices. I found no alternate for them. General-purpose control valves. I like ASCO Valve. I found ASCO Valve everywhere I looked. I couldn't find anybody else. I think I did find one that I put in the written version, but ASCO is just about universal for these things. So now we've completed the audio version of the PDH online course for electrical engineering design of jails. I hope this has been valuable to you and you take the next step and download the, I guess you do it online, you take the test and you get your points for license renewal and certificates suitable for training. It's suitable for framing. If at all possible, spend a little time looking at the offerings on the PDH course list. There's a wide range there also and should be something of interest to help you meet your needs as well. It's been a pleasure working with you, and thank you.